The shiur tonight is on Choni HaMe'agel and praying for rain. So we'll start with some background history. So the book that we're following is called The Sages, and Choni HaMe'agel actually doesn't really fit in chronologically. He lived a little bit later than Antigonus Ish Socho. He lived in the time of the third Zugos, Shimon ben Shetach and Yehuda ben Tabai. But the author of the book, he put this Choni HaMe'agel chapter right after because he thought it fit in conceptually with the whole idea of Antigonus Ish Socho and being an Eved Shalom Manasseh Kabo Pras. So we'll discuss Choni HaMe'agel tonight. And what's interesting also is that the book presents us with a historical account of Choni from Josephus. So Josephus wrote about Choni HaMe'agel. He has a little bit of a different interpretation of how he died. I think he was killed, according to Josephus. But if you look at the Gemara explains that there was this miracle. We're not going to do this Gemara in particular, but there was a miracle that he slept for 70 years, and when he woke up, nobody knew who he was, and he davened to die, and he was granted this tefillah. So it's an interesting Gemara on its own, but I just wanted to put this in historical context. Also, on a personal note, I have an affinity for Choni HaMe'agel because I played the part of Choni HaMe'agel in my third grade play, and what I remember about that play, which was interesting, which I don't think fits into the shiur, is that for some reason Choni HaMe'agel had a black hat in the play. So I don't think that was the case with the actual Choni HaMe'agel, who lived in the time of Bais Sheni. But hopefully, I don't think we'll see that in the sources. But we're going to look at the Gemara. The main source of the Gemara is Tainus Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. It's source number one. So we'll start with that Gemara. And if you look at the Gemara, the way that I divided it up was in three parts. And I think that there's three different parts of the story. And we'll try to define each one and try to analyze it philosophically and come up with an understanding of what was going on with this strange story. So if we start with the Gemara, source number one again. So I'm going to read through it as usual. So it says, Maisa Shishalchu L'Choni HaMe'agel. There is a story where they sent a letter to Choni HaMe'agel. Tanu Rabbanan. Pam achas yatsa rov adar v'lo yardu geshamim. So there was a time in the Bais Sheni where most of Adar went past and they didn't have any rain and they needed rain. So shalchu l'choni HaMe'agel. So the Jewish community, they sent to l'choni HaMe'agel hispalel v'yardu geshamim! Exclamation point. So please daven for us so that it'll rain. Hispalel v'lo yardu geshamim. He davened and nothing happened. There was no rain. So Ug Uga the Amad Besucha. So he made a circle, which Rashi says Uga. Look in source number two. Doesn't mean a cake. Shura Agula Kmo Uga Shaisa Agula. It's like a cake which is round, a round cake. So he made a circle and he stood inside the circle. Kederach Shaasa Chabakuk Hanavi. In the same way that Chabakuk, one of the Treyasar, also made a circle and he stood within the circle. Look at Rashi. Kederach Shaasa Chabakuk in source number two. So it says, "Kedem Mefarish B'Tirgum Shel Tefilas Chabakuk Al Mishmarti Emdo Kemin Beis Asurim Asa V'Yashav." So Chabakuk, in a similar way to Choni, had said and had made a circle for himself, like a jail. We'll see that the Mefarshim say it was a circle, and he stood there, and he sat there, and he waited. So then it keeps going. We're in source number one. So it says, "Shneamar," as it says, "Al Mishmarti Emdo Ves Yatzva Al Matzor." We'll look at that pasuk in detail. So Amar Lefanav, Ribono Shel Olam. So Choni, who made this circle, he said before Hashem, Ribono Shel Olam, Banecha Samu Pneam Al Sha'ani Keven Bayis Lefanecha. Your people have viewed me as a Ben Bayis, as someone who's part of your household. Nishba Ani B'Shimcha Gadol She'eni Zaz Mikan Ad Shetarachim Al Banecha. So he swears that he's not going to move from this circle until Hashem shows mercy on his people and brings about the rain. So the first part of the story, I divided it up into three parts, but it's all one big Gemara. So this is the first part, part number one. So it's interesting. Just to summarize, it's basically saying that Choni HaMe'agel was sent a letter to daven for rain. It didn't work the first time, so he makes a circle like Chabakuk, and he asks and he demands that Hashem provides the Jewish people with rain based on the fact that the Jews look at him in a certain way, and he even swears by Hashem's name that he's not going to move until Hashem provides mercy and gives mercy to his people. So there's a lot of questions. Just raise some of the questions. What's the idea of the circle in general? And what does it mean that he's, what's the similarity to Habakkuk? Obviously, the Gemara is saying it's similar to the Tfilas Habakkuk, which we'll look at inside. But what is the similarity? Is it just that they both made circles and they stood in it and they demanded an answer? Or was there a deeper connection between the two? I'm voting for the second, for the latter. And then also, why was he allowed to do this? I mean, it seems very odd that somebody could just demand and say, I'm going to swear by Hashem's name that I'm not going to move until he provides rachamim. What gave him the right to do this? I mean, it seems very strange. Also, it seems very odd based on like our own perception of Talmidei Chachamim and how they would act. It seems very strange to do something like this. So we're going to have to explain, you know, the basic idea of the tefillah here and what he's doing. So that's part number one. Then we'll move on to part number two. And I'm the one who, the Gemara doesn't divide it up like this, but again, I'm dividing it up into three parts. So what happens? Hischilu gesham menatfin. So after he does this, there's a little bit of dripping and drizzling of rain. So Amru lo tamidav, it was very light rain. So his students, Choni's students said, Rebbe, reinucha v'lo namas. They said, Rebbe, we want to see you and we don't want to die. Look at Rashi. It's the third Rashi. Reinucha v'lo namas, nira otzcha v'lo namas. We really want to see you and we don't want to die out of famine because, you know, this isn't enough rain exactly. A drizzle is not going to help us. We need more. So they said to Choni, it looks like the rain only came down to be matir yeshua. It's not really helping us. It's not really rachamim. So Amar, lo kach sha'alti. So he said back to his students, I didn't ask for this. Rather, I asked for rain that would fill in all the pits and the caves. A lot of rain. Yardu bizaf. Achikol tipa v'tipa kimalei pichavis. So what happened was, Hashem responded, and he brought down a lot of rain to the point where the geshamim was coming down like the size of a barrel, to fill up a barrel. V'shiru chacham sh'ein tipa p'chusam elog. Each one was not less than a log, which is a big shear. So Amr lo Tamidav, Rebbe, Reinucha, v'lo namas. So then his Tamidim came to him again, and they said, listen, we want to see you. We don't really want to die. Kimedumin anush engisham yordim el avid olam. It seems like the rain is only coming down to destroy the world, because it's so much rain. So Amr lo Fanav, lo kach shalti. So he said, I didn't ask for this. El gishme raton bracho nedavu. So I asked for a gishamim that was really, that was really gishme bracha. That it will be a proper amount. So yardu kitziknan ad she'alu kol am lahar habayis mipnei geshamim. So it says that it kept coming down to the point where all the am had to go up to har habayis because of the rain, the amount of rain that had poured on. Amrulo, they said, Rebbe, kishem shispalalta sheyardu kach hispalo v'yelchu lahem. So they said, just like you davened to have it come down, daven to make it go away. So Amr Lahem, so he said, Kach nekublani, she'ein mispalin al rova tova. So I have this mesora, this idea, that you're not supposed to daven to remove tremendous good. Afa pichein, heviu li par hoda, nevertheless, bring me a par hoda, a korban. Heviu lo par hoda, they gave him one, samach shte yadavalav, he did smicha, v'amar lefanav, ribono sholom. He said, Hashem, Amcha Yisrael showed Seisim in Mitzrayim in an Yicholin Lobero Tova v'Lobero Peronios. Your nation, Klal Yisrael, they can't survive with too much good and too much bad. Ka'ast Aleim in an Yichol Namod, Hishvat Aleim Tova in an Yichol Namod. If you get angry, they can't survive. If you get too happy or the too much good, they can't survive either. So he says, Yiratzom of Vanecha Shivzuku Agisham v'Yerevach Ba'Olam. So he davened that it should stop, basically, and miyad nishba haruach v'nispazru avim, the clouds separated, and v'zarcha chama v'yatsu am l'sada v'yibil lahem k'meinu pitrios. So the people were happy, and they had all these types of, I think, mushrooms and stuff that were wet, and everything was good. So look at Rashi. We have to do the Rashi's par hodal l'svados alav. So Choni was misvada on this par. Again, Choni lived in times of the second Beis Hamikdash, third Zugos, and they brought a par. They brought a korban. Kamein of Pitrios, shiyatsu melichlo chagasham v'yadu kishal bracha hayu. So they had all this good stuff, these vegetables, and they knew that it was Gishmei Bracha. So the second part of the story is also fascinating. So the second part is that basically what happens as a result of Choni's tefillah is that first there's not enough rain, then they ask him to daven for more, then he davens for more, and too much comes down, and it's still coming down to the point where they have to go out to Har Abayis, and finally they say to him, you gotta daven to make this stop, and he says, I can't. You're not supposed to daven al Rova Tova. But in the end, he says, bring me a par, bring me a korban, and he's misvada, and he says, Yiratzon, that the Jewish people, they can't survive based on too much good and too much bad, and it should go away, and it goes away, and everything clears up. So some of the questions on the second part are, why if Choni's tefillah was really that he wanted the right amount of, that Hashem should be merachim on them, so why, what is this weird thing where it's too much, too little? Why didn't Hashem just bestow upon the Jewish people what they needed? Why do you have to go through this process of, not enough and then too much? So that's strange. And also, furthermore, first he says that you can't daven to remove a good, and then he figures out a way to do it. It's almost like a runaround. Is it that you can't daven to remove Rov Tova, or is it allowed? So he does that through the korban, but why is that allowed? Why is that okay? And then the third part of the story, we'll do right now, and then we'll come back and we'll start defining it. So the third part is Shalach lo Shimon ben Shetach. So one of the Zugos and Shimon ben Shetach, he sent him a letter. El mali choni ata, if not for the fact that you were choni, goes rani alecha nidoy, I would have excommunicated you. So these are like, these years are like the years where Eliyahu was given the keys to the reign. If it weren't those types of years where basically you were given these keys, so Hashem Shemayim would be Meschalo. There would be a Chil Hashem because perhaps it wouldn't rain and it would look like your Nishba, like Rashi says. Look at Rashi. He says, Ilwali Choniata of Adam Gado, Lenado, Shemanadin al Kabar Rav, Shitiach Dvarm Amar Lo Kapsha Alti. So he says, you'd be put in Nidoy for basically saying to Hashem, I didn't ask for this. Shomale hayu shanim, it's not kavod arav, not kavod hashmaim. Shomale hayu shanim kishne Eliyahu, gzeras atziras kisham, avteach shal kisham, b'yadu shal Eliyahu garsinon. It wasn't like the times of Eliyahu where there was no rain, and Eliyahu was given the keys to the shamayim. Lo nimtza shem shamayim eschalo, bitmiya, it's a question, she Eliyahu nishba chay Hashem imiya shanim ha'ele talon matar, kiim lefi devari, ve'atad nishba she'en atah zaz atriyadur kishamim. So you're being nishba on Hashem's name that it should similar to Eliyahu, but if it wasn't that type of year and it was just regular, not it wasn't raining regularly, so it would be a chil Hashem if it didn't happen. Okay, so he says nimsa shem shemayim eschalal al yadcha zeh ozeh ba lidei shvua shav. So it would come to a shvua shav. It would look like you're lying. So aval ma. So back to the Gemara. He says aval ma esa loch shatam eschate lufnei amakom va'osel lucha ratzoncha. But what am I to do? This is Shimon ben Shetach. You sin towards God, and he does what you want. It's like a son who defies the father, but nevertheless, the father gives in. And the son says, give me some hot water to wash in. Shatfoni betzonein, tainli agozim, shkedim, afarsekim, rimonim, enosin lo. So he asks for all these things from his dad, and his dad gives in. So it says on this, we'll look at the pasuk of Mishle, that your father and mother will rejoice, she who bore you will exult. So the last part of the story is strange also, because Shimon ben Shetach is claiming that, Choni, basically our questions on him, what right do you have to do this? How could you just say lo kapsha alti? It sounds very chutzpah, and basically you should be put in nidoy. And what's his answer? What's the idea that it's like he's like a father, like Hashem's like a father? I mean, it's very anthropomorphic, and it doesn't really fit into our idea of Schar. I mean, I know we don't understand Schar Va'onesh, but it seems very strange that it's almost like a favorite child. That's what it sounds like Shimon ben Shetach is saying. What does that mean philosophically? Like, how can we explain that? So that's a lot of questions, a lot of Gemara. So let me just summarize quickly, and then we'll start. So just there's three parts of the story. Part one is Choni gets a letter. He makes a circle, stands in the circle like Habakkuk, and he says, I'm not going to move until you give them rain. Part two is that Hashem gives a little bit of rain. They complain. Then he asks for more rain, too much rain. They complain. he says, I can't do it. I can't remove too much rain. And then ultimately, he brings a korban and he basically davens and says, you know, the people can't withstand this. And Hashem, you know, Hashem, the Hashgacha changes, and now the rain is perfect. And then part three is where Shimon ben Shetach, one of the leaders, sends him a letter and sends out to him and says, basically, if not for the fact that you're a great man and you're choni, really what you did was inappropriate. But he says that you're like a son, and Hashem is like the father, and when you make a mistake, it doesn't seem to matter. So we have I brought in all those questions from before, but we'll start taking them up right now. Okay, so hopefully the story is clear. Any questions on the story, just the pshat of the story at this point? Okay, good. So the first question, go ahead.
There is one difference. In other words, he's being responsible for the tzibur. He's not being responsible for anything personally.
Okay, that's true, but still, I mean,
but tzorchei tzibur is a different entity. It's not a personal.
Agreed. But then the question is, I mean, still, Shimon ben Shetach criticizes him and says, if not for the fact that you're a choni, this wouldn't have been allowed. You wouldn't put a nidoy. So he doesn't say the reason why you were allowed to do this is because it's tibor. He says it's because you have this relationship with Hashem. So you have to understand what that is. But I agree with you. There is a difference between tibor and yachid. So let's look at some of the sources here and try to break this thing down, because I think there's a deep message in the story of Choni HaMa'agel. So one of the first questions I asked was, what's the deal with comparing Choni to Habakkuk, Hanavi? So what is this comparison? So the Gemara said that just as Habakkuk made a circle, so too Choni made a circle, and Habakkuk said, I'm not gonna leave until I get answered. So too Choni said the same thing. I'm not gonna move until my tefillah gets answered. So what was going on over there by Habakkuk? Does anybody know? Does anybody know Habakkuk in the of the people in the Shir? I don't think so. It's pretty obscure. There's only three prakim in Habakkuk, so it's very short. So if you look in source number three, it says the pasuk that's quoted is Al Mishmarti Em Daves Yatzva Al Matzor Va'atzapel Iros Ma'idabrebi Uma Ashiv Al Tochati. I will stand. I'm just reading you the Sefaria English version. I will stand at my watch, take up my station at the post, and wait to see what he will say to me, what he will reply to my complaint. So I think that he is referring to Hashem, and he's saying that I'm not going to move until I hear what Hashem says to me. So what is the context of this request? What was he requesting? So if you look in the Radak, Rashi is very similar, but the Radak is clear. In source number four, he says, Al Mishmarti Amda, Amar Navi Azos HaMavocha Shani Ba, Ani Shomer Umetzape Ma Ya'aneni HaKel Yisbarach Ba'atzlachas HaRasha. So he said that in this matter, he felt very ignorant, and he was going to wait to understand from Hashem how it's possible, based on Schar Va'onesh, that the Rasha should be granted success. And then he says, Mai daber bi ruach nevuah, kmo ruach Hashem daber bi. So he was waiting for a nevuah from Hashem. Umasha amar uma ashev, wrote lomar ma ashev l'shoa l'mosi. And what he means is, what will I respond to those who ask me this question as to how Rishayim succeed in this world? Ki lo ani levadi navoch al zeh inyan. So I'm not the only one who's unaware and not really, doesn't have a lot of info in this area. Umash amar ves yatzval matzor. What does it mean that I'll stand in siege by my post? Rotz lomar matzor ke adam should sar malav. He's going to be like a man who's in pain. The ain lo manos, he has no refuge. Ki ani ain li manos mizos hamavocha, maduach derech rishayim atzlacha. I don't have any refuge from this idea. I can't understand this idea, and it bothers me so much. How is possible that the Rasha, the evil person, succeeds? The Targum Yonos on us in Mishamish Hametzudasi Maskina Umiskena. I think it means that in the future I will Mishamish be Mishamish, use my Mitsudasi in my post. Umiskena, I guess I'll be in danger. So the Chazal say that he made a circle, the Amar Besocha, and he said, and he stood inside it, V'amar, Eini Zaz Mikan, I'm not going to move, Ache Tomar Li, Mipne Maha Rachdal Rishayim, until Hashem teaches me why he grants long life to Rishayim. So Habakkuk's tefillah and what he was demanding from Hashem was that he made a circle similar to Choni, or Choni was similar to him because Habakkuk was earlier. And he says, I'm not going to move until Hashem gives me some insight into Tzchar Ba'onesh in the sense that Rishayim succeed in this world. And this is a famous question, you know, why do good things happen to bad people? It's usually the opposite. Well, why do good things happen to bad people? And that's what was troubling him so much. And he didn't have an answer to anybody. I mean, I don't think any of us have answers to that. It's pretty difficult. But I mean, the answer is that we don't understand Tzchar Ba'onesh, and it's not in Olam Hazeh. But he was looking for greater insight, obviously, than what I just said. So he creates a circle, and he's standing there, and he says, I'm not going to move until Hashem responds. So obviously the question still remains, but I think we needed this insight is to understand what he was. It wasn't the same as Choni. Choni was being mispalel for rain, and he's asking for knowledge. So what exactly is the comparison between the two? What's the connection between the two when they seem to be like somewhat different? And also, again, what right did they have to do this? You know, it seems like chutzpah to demand and say to God, you know, I'm not going to move until you respond to me. I mean, who are you? You're nothing. You know, you're nothing. So how could they do that? How could Habakkuk do that? How could Choni do that? Okay, so those are the questions. So I'm just going to set up a couple questions, like make them a little stronger, and then give an answer. So this is all for part one. We're going to define part one, part two, and part three. Hopefully they'll fit. So the next thing is just, so now we know there's a connection between Choni and Habakkuk, and we know what it is. And look at the Marsha. He says, "Kiderech sha'asa Habakkuk, the chol mispalel omid al makom echad." So anybody who daven stands on one spot. Of amidich sibbei b'lashon kaful emda ves yatzva. So it says emda ves yatzva. I'll stand and I'll stand. Basically, it's similar idea. Demashmalei da'ag uga b'makom shispalel. So he made a circle in the place that he davened for this knowledge. Lo yezaz misham ad she'enev. He's not going to move until he's answered. The Uga Shura Agula, and it's a circle. Kaperish Rashi, Vainsham, Ze, Nikra, Chonim Aga, Rotzalom, Hashem, Agil, Atma, Bashura Agula. So he just explains that the Lashon indicates that he made this circle, and same thing with Choni, so they're very similar. So the next Marsha is also very important for the first part, for part one. So if you look at the top of the next page, if you have the source sheets, it says Kaven Bias. So then another question that was bothersome in the first part was, what does it mean that Choni is like a Ben Bias, that the people look at him like a Ben Bias? What exactly is that a reference to? It seems like an odd characterization of a person as being a Ben Bias of God, of Hashem. So the Marsha, thankfully, points us in a direction. So he says, Kiven Bias, Alpi Mashikasa Perk Einomdim, Shamar Le Ishto Shal Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So there's a similar phraseology in Brachos, that the wife of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai said to him, V'chi Chanina gadol mimcha? She had a lot of pride in her husband. And she said, is Chanina greater than you? She'ata mevakesh rimenu shehu yispal al bincha? That you're asking Chanina to daven for your son? V'amar lo, he said to her, lo, he's not greater than me. Ela shehu dome ke'eved, shehu ragil b'vesa melech. But he's not greater than me, but Chanina is like an eved. It's like he's a servant in the house of the Melech, va'ani kesar lifnei ha-melech, but I'm like an officer. Kenem fur Hashem, like it says over there, v'achi nami ha-chi kamar, lo mipnei gidulasi samu pnei ha-malai, ela shani kiven bayis ragil lefanecha. And Choni's saying the same thing. It's not because I'm a great person, but rather it's because I'm like a ben bayis, and that's how people view me. So the second question, the first question was Habakkuk, what's the connection? And I just explained, at least on a pshat level, what the comparison is. But now the next question is, what's a ben bias? And you see from the Marsha that a ben bias doesn't mean that you're great necessarily, because the Gemara in Brachos says that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was greater than Chanina, but yet Chanina was the one that he turned to daven for him, which seems very odd. So what exactly is the difference between a ben bias and a gadol? And what's the difference? And what is the ben bias of Hashem? So if we look in the Gemara itself, it's important to look at the source to make sure that we're not being lied to or cheated here. So if you look in the source, Brachos Daf Lamed Dalet Amud Beis, Vishuv Maisad Rav Chanina Ben Dosa, also strange Gemara. So Chanina Ben Dosa, which I think is the next Tana that we're going to discuss, Shehalach Lilmod Torah Eitzel Rav Yochanan Ben Zakkai. So Chanina Ben Dosa went to learn by Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Chala b'no shel Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. So his son got sick, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was towards the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. So Amar lo Chanina b'ni, he said, Chanina, my son, b'kesh alav rachamim v'yichyeh, you should daven and ask for mercy, and my son will live, so that he'll live. Hiniach rosho ben birkov, uvikesh alav rachamim. So he stuck his head between his knees, and he asked for rachamim. This is Chanina ben Dosa. So Amar Rav Yochanan v'chyeh, and he lived. Amar Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, ilmale hitziach ben Zakkai es rosho ben birkov kol yom kulo, if not for the fact that Chanina put his head between his knees the whole day, lo yamashkichem alav. So nothing would have, it wouldn't have happened that he would have lived, and Hashem would have intervened. Amar lo ishto, so his wife said to him, v'chi Chanina gadol mimcha, how could Chanina be greater than you? He's coming to learn by you. He needs you. So Amar lo, alav, he's not, elohu domeke eved lefnei amelech, ani domeke sar lefnei amelech. But we're different. I'm like a sar, I'm like an officer, and he's like an eved. And if you look at Rashi, he says, ke eved ben bayis nipnas v'yotzi shil bershas. He's like an eved. He goes into, you know, kaviyachal Hashem's house, and without permission. But I'm like a sar, sheini rugged level of enough. I'm important, but I don't go before God that often. So it's not so clear what the difference is between a gadol and a ben bayis. What exactly is the difference? Can we define it? And it's a strange story. I mean, I don't know if I can answer this question in particular. But what's he doing, sticking his head between his knees? I mean, I think, if we saw somebody doing that nowadays, like sticking their head between their knees the whole day, I mean, it would seem very odd to us from our perspective. So what exactly was he doing? And I think I can define that, actually. I think I do have a sar for that. But what exactly was he doing by putting his head between his knees? And what's the difference between Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? I mean, he should daven for his own son. He's asking Chanina, not because he's greater, but because he's a ben bayis. So what is the difference between, you know, a ben bayis and a chacham like Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? I mean, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who saved Torah by moving everything to Yavne, and he saved Torah. So he seems to be quite a great man. So this Chanina ben Dosa is coming along, and he's somewhat different. So what exactly is the difference, and why was he better to daven? And then the final thing in part one is, as Hashem Lakachatira also Savo to Vos Hidbak Mishmot Tishaveya, famous pasuk in Akev, that if you should fear Hashem, and you should worship Him, and you should cling to Him, and you should swear in His name. So Mishmot Tishaveya LaAcher Shiu Bein Kach Kol Midos Halalu Az Tuchal Tishaveya Bishmo. When you have all these midos, you serve Him, you're fearful of Him, etc. Then you're allowed to be to swear in His name. Or it's a mitzvah to swear by God's name in certain time periods. That it'll create a kiddush Hashem. Like we see, this is Rabbeinu Bachya, like we see by Eliyahu and Choni HaMe'agel. So what exactly is the going on here? You know, so those are all the, at least that gave us more insight, but we have to define the ideas of the first part. So, anybody have any possibilities or any questions before I give a possibility that I was thinking about earlier? I think I touched on most of the questions. All right, so it's a very difficult area to understand, I believe. But I want to try and approach. So, what really stood out to me was, like I said before, the connection between Habakkuk and really Choni. So what exactly is the connection? Is it just that they demanded, or was there a deeper connection? So we see by Habakkuk that really what he was requesting was knowledge, the knowledge of how Schar Va'Onesh worked, and the idea of standing in a circle was that he was desperate for that information, and it's to the point where he's in pain, and he's just demonstrating the level of pain that he feels, and the level of desperation that he feels. This is just a pshat according to the Radak. The level of desperation that he feels, that he has no refuge if he can't have this knowledge, and that's what he's demonstrating. He's not demonstrating, or he's not demanding from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he get this knowledge. He's demonstrating that this knowledge is a source. This lack of knowledge is a source of pain for him, and he's so attached and he's so desirous of this knowledge that he can't move. He can't leave unless he has the knowledge. So maybe we could take that idea and kind of transfer it to Choni. So on the one hand, Choni Magel was davening for a practical, functional result of rain. But perhaps the framework that Choni Magel was davening in was a similar framework to Habakkuk. That just like Habakkuk was davening for the knowledge of how Schar Va'Onesh worked, and he was demonstrating an inability to move, a desperation without this knowledge, maybe Choni Magel was capable, and that this was the idea of Choni Magel, he was capable of being mispilel, not for the, not just for the practical result of rain, but for the knowledge of how the system of Hashgacha vis-a-vis rain worked. And he was able, perhaps, to separate the need and the desire practically and functionally to the knowledge. Just like Habakkuk was asking for knowledge, and he was saying, I can't move without this knowledge, so too, the tefillah of Choni wasn't designed for this practical result of rain, but rather it was designed in a similar way, whereby Choni was expressing a desire for the knowledge of how the Hashgacha worked vis-a-vis rain. And he was showing through standing in the circle the level of desperation that he felt for this knowledge. And that's what I think it means, that that's the difference, I think, between a ben bias and an eved and a person who's a chacham and a gadol. So an eved is a person who's constantly in a state whereby they are in a state of servitude, that they're constantly in a state where they're always ready to serve and ready to gain knowledge and to be in this presence of God. Whereas a chacham, he's not always in that state. I mean, his mindset is different. He's not always in the state to be in the presence of God. Like Moshe was the most prominent idea of Eved Hashem, because he was always in the state where he was always in the state where he'd be prepared to be in the presence of God. So the idea I think is that Choni Ma'agel, even though it sounded like he was demanding, even like lo kach sha'alti, but the idea was that he wasn't asking from the framework of ego. He was asking from the framework of servitude, of lowliness, of being a namuch, of being someone in that state. So it appeared to Shimon ben Shetach like he was being arrogant, but in reality, because he was always in the state of avdus, the idea that is being expressed in this Gemara is that he's asking for the knowledge, but he's not asking from the framework of need and demand. Rather, he's asking from the framework of being an anav, and just a desire, being desirous of the knowledge. And I think that's the idea of knowing how to be in the state before God. And that's the idea by Chanina ben Dosa as well. So what's the idea of him? What's the concept of him putting his head between his knees? So I think it's a similar idea of showing anivus. It's like a posture of anivus. When you stick your head into your knees area, you're really close to the ground. Your body's close to the ground. It's like you're a ball. And it's a posture of anivus. So Chanina ben Dosa was also capable of being in that mental state whereby he was in the presence of God, or felt like he could be in the presence of God, almost like he could receive nevuah. But Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, he wasn't. He didn't have the same state of mind. It doesn't mean that he wasn't greater in chachma and Torah and knowledge, but he didn't have the same consistent state of mind of avdus, of being in servitude, always being ready to be in the presence of God. So that's the difference between a ben bias and a gadol, and I think that's why Choni Magel, that's what the first part, that was a couple of the questions were answered. What's the connection between Choni and Habakkuk? And furthermore, what's the idea of him being a ben bias? So that's the idea, I believe. That's the concept, which is that Choni was a ben bias in the sense that he was capable of being in a state of mind where he'd be ready to be in the presence of God, ready to receive nevuah in all times, just like Moshe was the ultimate Eved. So that is the state of Avdus. That's like a ben bias. So too was Chanina ben Dosa. And similar to Habakkuk, he wasn't asking from the standpoint of need, and he was asking from the standpoint of knowledge. He was asking from the framework of, I can't exist, I can't move forward unless I have this knowledge. And I think that feeds into the next part, in the next part of the story. So if that's really what he was asking for, he was asking for the knowledge of the Hashgacha, it kind of makes sense, because the next part of the story, what's bothersome is that it goes up and down. You get little rain, too much rain, then they ask to remove the rain, and he says, you can't remove the rain. And then he in the end, he says, it's not for me, meaning he's saying it's for Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael can't survive without this, with too much good and too much bad. So he's not even asking from a personal standpoint. So what exactly does that show you? See, it shows you that what he received was the idea of how the extremes and the idea of God's control over the hashgacha of rain. And he got to see all the different examples and all the different expressions of how God could operate in bringing about this intervention of rain. So the amount of differentiation in what was given is an expression of what Choni really wanted, which was the knowledge of how it worked, not necessarily the practical and the functional of Gishmei Bracha. And that's why you see in his tefillah, he's not upset, or he's not saying from a personal standpoint, he was fine. He got to witness the way that Hashgacha worked and the expression of the Hashgacha and all its glory and all its different manifestations. And he was happy with that because he gained a certain insight. But the people, on the other hand, that's why he was davening from the standpoint of the people. The people couldn't tolerate it on a practical level. But he was perfectly happy. He got what he wanted. And that's what the Gemara is expressing. It's showing you from the second part of the story, it reflects on the first part of the story, which is that he really wasn't concerned. He was concerned about how Rachamim worked, and he wanted to see the nature of Rachamim, and Rachamim vis-a-vis rain, and he wasn't interested necessarily in the practical. But so that's why they keep asking him to daven for things to change, but it seems like he doesn't go out of his way to do it himself. They have to ask him to do it. So why is that the case? Because he got what he wanted. He wanted the knowledge. He wanted the manifestation. He wanted to witness it. And he got that. They wanted it for practical reasons. They wanted it to survive for bracha. He wanted it just to be able to see and gain insight into the way that rachamim works vis-a-vis rain. So I think that's the idea of Choni Ma'aga, one idea, one possibility. Yeah, go ahead.
Shot of the Gemara seems to be very, very clear that he's making a demand and that he wants something. I appreciate the analogy to Pabacho and the fact that, but it seems that they were both had very different requests. Well, you know, one was looking for knowledge expressly. I mean, why, if that's what, if he was really asking for knowledge, it seems like a very confusing and misleading way to present that information, the way the Gemara describes it.
Well, it sounds like the only way that I'm saying that obviously it didn't work when the Am was mispalo. So it sounds like the Am's it didn't work when the Am was mispalo. That's why they needed him, and he tried. It says that he was mispalo once, and it didn't work. So what's the difference between the first tefillah and the second tefillah? So it sounds like the first tefillah was just your classic tefillah that he stood there, because it says the first time he davened it didn't work, and then he had to do this. So what was the transition from the first time to the second time? So that's what I'm trying to give a svar for. I'm trying to show that, at least this is my approach, that the first time he was approaching it like a regular tefillah, that he's davening for a need, just like Klal Yisrael would daven for a need. It just happens to be that he's on a certain level and maybe he has a certain insight. He can gain a greater level of concentration. So that's why they asked him. But once that didn't work, so he realized he tried a different tactic. And it's similar to Moshe, for example. So it's a good question, but you see by Moshe also, it seems like when Moshe was asking for the Jews to be saved, like after the Egel or after the Meraglim, it seems like he wanted the practical result of the Jews being saved. But we know from the Gemaras that he was also primarily looking for the knowledge, and he uses that as an opportunity to ask for the famous question that he wants to see Hashem. So we see that these types of individuals, Avadim, like Moshe and Choni, so they use the practical as a means of gaining knowledge. So it's the same. So if you just read the Torah, it would seem like Moshe's objective was simply that the Jews should be saved. But if you read the Gemaras and you read the insight on that, you also see that Moshe's primary was always more knowledge of God and trying to get closer and part of being an Eved was trying to gain more and more knowledge. So that's what I'm saying. I'm saying the same idea by Choni, that it looks like on the outside that he's only concerned about the Jewish people's reign, but I'm saying the nature of an Eved is such that he's always seeking the knowledge, and the practical is really secondary to the knowledge itself. And it's similar, like I said, it's similar to Habakkuk in the sense that it wasn't a demand, it was more of a desperation, and that's the comparison to Habakkuk. I mean, the Gemara is comparing the two to show you that just like Habakkuk, we view it as a desperation. So too, Choni's move was a move of desperation. It was a demonstration of the need, of that desperate need for this information.
How does Choni Amagel's burning desire for this knowledge square with the fact that he didn't ask for it until the people came to him and had the practical need? If he had the desire, shouldn't he have just come to this request on his own? Why does it need to come from the people?
That's a good question. I mean, it could be that he saw this as an opportunity for that knowledge to be manifest, you know? Sometimes you have to look for your opportunities, like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, he took advantage of the situation of the Jewish people being in after post-Meraglim, post-Ego. So perhaps the idea was that Choni knew that this was an opportunity for him, for his tefillah to transcend and to be able to gain this knowledge. So sometimes you have to take advantage of that situation. So this was an opportunity for him. Perhaps he knew that he wouldn't have... With it, when you get an opportunity, that's when you ask, and that's when you have a high likelihood of getting that. But if there's nothing practical, if there's nothing to trigger that knowledge, like Moshe Rabbeinu, I mean, Moshe Rabbeinu always wanted to see God, but there was a trigger there of the fact that the Jews needed him to daven on their behalf. So he used that to his advantage. Same thing with Choni. There's a trigger. The people needed rain, and he used that to his advantage in order to gain, I think, to gain or to be desirous of greater insight. Okay, hopefully that answered the question. But good question, excellent. I just want to give you a different approach to the second part, and then we'll get to the last part also. So the second part, there's another approach, which is I like also. It was, I don't know who actually gave this approach, but I saw it in the Daf al Daf, which is one of the explanations of the Gemara. Source number 10, it's on my Bar Ilan CD. So it says, he says, Ela korach achua davar shermanu shishlita al gishamim. So it says that, that rather it's what we said, that you have to say that there's a dominion over rain. Lo nimtza bidei adam me'az yamos ha'olam. It's never in the hands of man. Ki lo nimtzru maftechoseha. The keys to rain were never given over. Zulas biyado yisbarach. They're only in the hands of God. Uveprat lehoridan karoi. And in specific, to bring down rain properly. Bizmancha nigzar atzirasan. In a time where there's a gzera of Atzira, of no rain. Ke uvde de choni, v'rav Yehuda, v'chol shekein b'mei akayetz, ke uvde de rava, de munagdim heim azatovas aretz. So there are other examples of similar examples to choni. So pshita de ein kala ridan, it's pasha that it's not easy for the rain to come down. V'chol shekein shem kfar nanu v'etrichu liftoach arubos hashamayim lo b'meher yiskeru. And if there's a lot of davening in order to open up the skies for the rain to come out, lo b'meheri yiskeru, it's not just going to close easily. V'adarabah, zeh os asher sham hal laharos. So that's the proof that it was coming to show or to demonstrate. She'af b'tzadikim kanizkar le'el, she'govho karozim govham, even with tzadikim, whose height is like the height of these cedar trees, k'she'espalu al gishamim nanu, and when they daven for rain, they were answered, v'kol makom lo nimtzru v'nishla b'yadam. Nevertheless, the idea was that it wasn't given over to them, the ability to control rain. Bechdei lo ridam benachas, in order to bring it down properly. Bechol shekein achar sheyardu bezaf, and even more so when it came down really hard. Shekasha shevasayim al atzron, it was hard to stop it. K'moshes v'adachoni, v'amar kach mekublani she'emes ba'alin arov tova. So he says, v'chol shekein im yordu mimei akayetz govdu derabba, v'lachin ikbidu aleim, v'ayin bach shekasar v'lachin in levakish b'zbanenu b'kayetz al gishamim, af bishama kolin bishma kolin of afal tzurach mamish ayin sham. So I think he's saying that the second possibility for the middle part is to demonstrate that even though Choni daven for rain, and like I was saying, he's davening for the knowledge, but it's still, there's a practical response of rain. But the idea of the manifestation of all these different types is to show that he didn't have control over it, that the people shouldn't think that he's like a magic worker and a magical worker, and that he controls when the rain comes, because then there's the possibility of this distortion emerging, that Choni is this magic worker, and the idea should always be that Hashem is really in control of the rain, and therefore it's manifest in different, you know, in different ways. Okay, so that's a different possibility. So my possibility was showing that, the second part is showing that Choni was responded to by demonstrating or by manifesting all the different ways in which God is merachim through rain, whether it be light rain, too much rain, but it's the expression of rachamim, and to its in all its degrees. And the other possibility is that there wanted to be a there had to be a demonstration that it's not man in man's control, that rain is not in man's control and not in Choni's control. And even though Choni was answered, it doesn't mean that the tzaddik has control. It's not nimsar to the tzaddik. It's still in the hands of God. Okay, fine. So just one last point. I want to skip 11 and we'll do 12 and 13. So the last part of the story is that Shimon ben Shetach says that, so this is an interesting point. Shimon ben Shetach adds an extra point. He says, you're like a son to a father, and whatever you do, Hashem just gives into you. And that's why I didn't put you in Nidoy, because, you know, what can I do? He responds to you. Hashem responds to you. So what is that pasuk? What's that reference to that pasuk? It's Mishlei. If you look in source number 12, it says, Yisamach avicha v'imecha v'sagel yoladcha. So it says, your father and mother will rejoice, she who bore you will exult. So if you look in the Malbim over there, there's another idea that I wanted to share about Choni. So the Malbim explains this pasuk. He says, Yisamach avicha v'imecha v'sagel yoladcha, that they'll be happy and she who bore you will exult. Avalhu mi'atzeyu shishnaig be'ofin, Shagam ha'omnim yismichu v'hayoldim yagilu v'hu im yimshol berucho b'choach ha'chachma v'amoser ad sheyeh chacham lev. So the idea is that when they give you advice, when your parents give you advice to the point where you act like a chacham and you are a chacham lev, that's when they exalt. V'hayinu sh'chachma timshol b'libo v'tasa etzlo tevasheni. That's when the chachma that they taught you and that they instill within you becomes a second nature to you. In a way where you're not no longer drawn by the Yetzer Hara as much and the Taivos. So you're not really in tremendous doubt. You know, it's Chachma is like a second nature to you. And the way to do this is by getting rebuked from your parents and following in line with the Chachma. So then if that's the case, if the son ends up having Chachma as like his second nature, then the parents get happy who raised him, because they're the ones, when they raise their son, who raised them in a way whereby this would be normal. The gamo you let is tagil gila chadasha, and even the one who bore him will be very happy. Chutz min asimcha rishona, aside from the first simcha, al hachana samezeg, based on the temperament and the temperament of the child and preparing the temperament. Yagilu al hasmados habechira v'koach hamoshel shebo shezeh geder gil. But there will be another happiness over the fact that the son now is using his bechira, his free choice, properly and it really drives him towards the good. So basically the Malbim is saying there's two types of simcha. There's a simcha when you, the happiness of the parent when they see the temperament of the child and how they raise the child with a certain natural temperament. And then the second is when you see your child exercising their bechira properly to the point where it becomes second nature to the child, and they're no longer drawn away from it, and it becomes like part of them, part of who they are. So if that's the case, so then that's the second type of simcha that a parent feels. So they feel two. One is, again, in seeing the temperament and trying to deal with the temperament trying to improve the personality of the child. And the second is when you see, based on your actions and how you raise a child, that Chachma becomes second nature to them and their Bechira is in line with the good. So what does that have to do with Choni? So maybe that's the idea by Choni, that Choni had a natural temperament that was in line with serving God, but also his Avdus was like second nature. And it almost became natural for him to be in this state. When you do something over and over again, it becomes part of your natural way, your natural state of mind. So perhaps that's the idea by Choni, that Choni was like this case in Mishlei, where the fathers and mother are happy because of these two things. Choni was like that vis-a-vis God, that Choni was such that his temperament was perfectly set for this type of state of mind of being an Eved Hashem, and his nature was now naturally instilled within him. So to the point where where it was always there. Like it became natural for him, and that's the second simcha. So that was what Choni. That's the relationship that is being expressed between Choni and God. That it's not that God was the father, but it's the idea that Choni, like in the case of Mishlei, had the temperament and also had instilled his this idea of being an Eved Hashem to the point where it was a natural element of his personality. So with that, let me just summarize, and then the questions. You guys can ask questions, but I just wanted to summarize one last time. So there's this story about Choni is very strange. There's three parts to the story. The first part, again, is where Choni's asked to daven for rain, and he tries once, doesn't work. Then he does what Habakkuk did, similar, and he makes a shvua, and he's able to daven and be successful. But the second part talks about how in the beginning it gets drizzle, then it gets too much rain. They ask him to stop it. He says, I can't. It's a good. And then finally he brings a korban, and he davens on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And then the last part is Shem Metchetach. He says, listen, I would have put you in Nidoy because what you did was inappropriate. It could have created a Chil Hashem, but I'm not going to because you're like, you know, it's like a father and you're like a son who wrongs the father, but the father always gives in. And he quotes this pasuk. So I wanted to try to give ideas for each part. So the first point, I think the first part of the story opens the whole area up, at least the way I'm looking at it, is that the comparison to Habakkuk is more essential than just creating a circle. But just like Habakkuk was searching for this knowledge of Schar Va'Onesh, and he saw an opportunity to do that, and he's demonstrating by drawing the circle the desperation that he feels in the lack of this knowledge and the need for this knowledge. So too, Choni, at first he davens and it doesn't work, but then he moves to the strategy of Habakkuk, where he's able to daven from the framework of just wanting the knowledge to the point where he's desperate and he can't move. He's stuck, and he's stuck in that circle, and he can't move, and he just like Habakkuk is showing that he's in pain without it, so too Choni was able to demonstrate that, and that's why his tefillah was answered, as opposed to the original tefillah, because the tefillah originally was from the standpoint of need, and the standpoint of knowledge is a much more impactful type of tefillah, and therefore he was responded to, and we try to explain the difference between a ben bias and a chacham. Ben bias is a person who's in a state where he can be in the presence of God all the time. He's constantly in that state. Whereas a gadol is more talking about the nature of his wisdom and chachma. And same thing with Chanina ben Dosa. Why did he put his head in his knees and daven? Because Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai recognized that Chanina was capable of being in that mental state to a greater degree than himself. And being in that posture is a posture of lowliness, of anivas. And then the second idea is the second part of the story, which was either to demonstrate that Choni, because Choni was never bothered by the drizzle or too much rain, they always had to ask him. So Choni was happy just seeing the rain. That's based on what I was trying to say, and he just wanted to see it and gain insight into the manifestation of Rachamim in this world through Geshem. But he davens on behalf of the people, and we see that from the korban. But the other approach is that the various manifestations is to demonstrate to the people that it's not in Choni's hand, that Choni's not a magic worker, but it's really all in the hands of God, and it wasn't Nimsar to Choni. And then finally, the last idea was Shimon ben Shetach describing the nature of Choni, and he's saying that really Choni should be a Nidoy, but because of his temperament and the ability for him to inculcate being an Eved into his nature, so that was such the point where he was like a different type of individual. He had a different relationship to God than just your average chacham. And that's what's expressed by Shimon ben Shetach regarding Choni Ma'agel. All right, so any questions?